With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Sam Pets Radio, Australia's coolest podcast network.
Hey everybody, welcome to another episode of All the Small Games, an indie games podcast usually hosted by Andrew Levins and John Valenzuela, but John is currently still, can you believe it, looking after his three-week-old child. Pretty selfish if you ask me, but in his stead we have a very special guest joining me via Zoom from Melbourne, sunny Melbourne. It's actually, for once, sunnier than Sydney. It actually looks quite nice. It's gross over here.
It's great. I've turned the exposure up on my camera incredibly high so that it makes us look sunny here. But that is just a street light that you're seeing there.
Oh, great. Yeah, perfect. It's already winter solstice there.
Yeah, that's the northern lights. It's so dark here that the northern lights, the light from there has even emanated down across the hemispheres down to here.
Hey, maybe you recognize his voice. He is a comedian and one of the hosts of the podcasts Filthy Casuals and Ooh Spooky. I'm forgetting one, aren't I? You have too many.
I don't know. Maybe. I don't keep track anymore either.
Adam Knox is here, everybody.
Hi. Yeah. Thank you for having me.
Are you ready to talk about small games?
I sure am.
You talk about big games way too much. That's what everyone says about you.
Dude,
you guys are Filthy Casuals.
I'm
too
all
many
about
big games.
Big business. We're the Exxon of podcasts. I don't give a shit about you unless you are above a certain... if you're not listed on the NASDAQ, then I'm not going to play you. I do end up playing a lot more big games that I medium enjoy than little games I see and go, oh, fuck, that looks interesting. And then forgetting about in getting swept up by pretty much the hype culture. I hate to think that I am a sucker to that, but you know, I play Call of Duty every year.
But you love that.
Yeah, but I don't know why. I don't want to. I don't want to be that person. Maybe I'm just like a self-hating snob. Where like I actually like cheeseburgers quite a lot.
What have you recently spoken about on Filthy Casuals? You did Resident Evil 8 last week.
Yeah, we had big boy Resident Evil, big hitter.
Big lady.
What else? Yeah, 9 foot tall game and lady, and I want to fuck them both. Whatever the biggest, like Mass Effect and like remasters and things like that. A lot of that sort of thing at the minute.
Are you trying to take down all three of those again?
No way. Not a chance. Yeah. I'm done with that for now. I thought about it and then like realized that I can finally put something behind me. You know, I can never play those again and I cannot worry about them being archived and shit. And I can just say I've actually done those and they can be a memory from now on. They're very good. But yeah, again, not indie stuff. Because often I feel bad going in on... Because like the most recent indie games that I remember playing, I love puzzle games.
Mm-hmm.
They're my favorite. And in terms of indie games, usually at least, like they tend to be made best by non-big studios.
Top three indie puzzle games, go.
The Witness, number one. Number two would be the Room series, which I'm going to talk about later. Great. As a whole. And number three would be Call of Duty World War II in 2017. I don't know. I don't have a catalog in my head, but I ended up not liking a bunch because they're the ones that I go for. So I have more ones that I don't. And this is what I was going to say, is that I feel bad shitting on them, on indie games in particular, because, you know, if someone listens, they might be the person who made it.
Yeah.
You know,
and it's their singular vision that you're saying is awful.
Right, exactly. I'm saying, hey, you know, Superliminal or what was that one that came at Marquette?
Oh man, we didn't like that one either. That felt like way too many people involved in that one.
Well, maybe, yeah. And it, like, you could tell that they'd been banging their head against that wall for 7 years and not really getting anywhere, and then they were just like, I've got to just put it out.
Get, like, Bryce Dallas Howard on the line. She'll know what to do.
Yeah. Wait, she left her phone on and it sounds like her relationship's breaking up. Wait, just record this. We can use this. So I actually
have a puzzle game to talk about on the show today called There Is No Game, Wrong Dimension, that actually made it into John's top 10 games of 2020. Wow. Will it make it into mine of 2021? I'll let you know soon. Noxy is going to review The Room VR.
Uh-huh.
So we haven't talked about a VR game in the show in a while. I have PSVR. You have, how many VR devices do you own?
Only two now, because I sold one.
Only two.
Oh,
wow.
Because I got I had a PSVR and one of the Rift S's, but I got convinced during a recording of Filthy Casuals, the podcast that I do, to get one of the Quest 2s, and it is great. It is kind of,
that's
an
the one with no cords,
nothing. You're just walking around your house, so nothing on, except for a VR headset, and it works surprisingly well for that. So I've been playing a bunch of games on that, and then, like, you know, games run natively on it, even if you don't connect up to your PC too. It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, when they announced PS VR 2, and like they, you know, in the very first announcement, they say, oh, it's only going to have one cord. I'm like, that's one cord too many. We've flown too close to the sun, or whatever the term is. Like, we know how good you can have it.
100%.
Why make it running the cords back? Yeah.
I understand why they would do it, because, like, it really relies, this Quest one at least, on having a good Wi-Fi setup, which I only do at certain times of the day because I live in an apartment building, so there's interference from other people's things. So I completely get why they would want to make something that definitely works
for everyone.
Who they're going to do it with. But it's a shame because, yeah, once you cut that cord, as John would know, you can't go back. That's it. You're out for weeks after that.
Yeah. They said, start breeding babies. Yeah, Oculus babies are born without the umbilical cord.
I mean, one day they'll have their chips in them and stuff, man. That's what I believe.
Yeah, but you just have to sign up for a Facebook account before you can have the baby.
Yeah. I don't mind the idea, because there is, like, a cord you can get to make the Quest connect to a PC. And one cord is probably fine if it's long enough. Mm-hmm. But the problem is with this stuff is that there's a limit, like a technological limit on the length of cords you can have. I didn't realize this until I was being an idiot and looking up how to get, like, 10 meter extension cords for a Rift S. And the bandwidth of the technology means that you have to just have a 5 meter cord. You can't go further than that.
Yeah, right. Wow.
Unless
you are
plugged in repeaters and stuff like that. So you need power again and again after 5 meters. So that is, like, the maximum length away from your thing that you can get. Which is, you know, that's the problem that I had with the wires, is that my computer is in one corner of my room and the room where there's space is all the way over the other. Yeah.
Nightmare shit.
It is. But because I love VR, and VR is a great place where there's really innovative indie games and stuff too. And there's a lot of ones that are just like, imagine if you were holding a gun. Let's make a whole game around just that. But there's a lot of really cool things on there too, so...
Yeah, well, why don't we talk about one of them, The Room VR, which is a game that you've played recently. It came out last March.
Mm-hmm.
It was developed by Fireproof Studios, and they published it too. It's currently available on the Oculus Quest and on the, I guess, it must be on PSVR as well.
So, yeah, I think they put it out on PSVR not that long ago, possibly. That happens with PSVR a lot. Is that something would come out on the PC and then there'll be a PSVR version in a year or something when they figure out how to kind of pare it down enough. And yeah, this is the fifth, I believe, in a series called The Room, which is like they started off on iPhones, and I think you can get all of them on Steam now. I think everything you can just get in the one place there, and on Switch possibly as well. They're very simple puzzle games. You are standing in a room, and there will be a box in front of you with a whole bunch of weird little pulleys and levers and stuff, at least in the first one. And you go and twiddle a bunch of circles, and you go, oh, there's a number, and you take it over to the other side, and you open this little puzzle box. And as the series went on, the rooms got larger and larger, and you were going around, and now it's basically, it's Myst or something like that. It's a first-person move around a space puzzle game, interact with a whole bunch of cool little puzzle boxes, and it translates so well to VR, and I loved it.
Yeah, so you play this one on the Oculus Quest?
Yes.
And yes. Does it take, like, all the things that you're handling, does it take into account the kind of things that you're able to do on those controllers, or is it mostly just, like, touch this, turn that?
It's touch this, pull that. It's Simon Says. It's that. It's not much. It's not too detailed in the way of it being a VR game. It adds to the experience of playing another one of those games, but in more of a 3D kind of feeling way. But yeah, it doesn't add too much new because it's it doesn't use the VR thing particularly creatively, I suppose. And it can even be a hindrance sometimes because you're turning a big crank or whatever, and it doesn't map particularly well all of the time. And so it can feel a little weird. But they've got sort of like a horror through line to them. Very mildly so. It's like the horror aspect is basically just that it's set in like early 1900s England, and that was spooky. Like, it's not much beyond that. It's creaks on the floorboard and that sort of level of horror, so you're not going to get too freaked out with it. But
are you like, is the story that you're trying to escape the box that you're in, or are you trying to get into it?
In the first one, I believe it was that, but it's got this sort of weird like lore around it that I keep forgetting in between each of them coming out. And then a new one comes out and I go, oh, great, I like those. And you get reminded that it's all about like interdimensional demons or something. And there's like a cult eyeglass that you have to wear. And it's very silly. But the puzzles themselves are really enjoyable to do because they're simple. And they're like complex in the way that a puzzle is, but it's a box in front of you. It's usually a panel of moving objects. You just got to figure out how to move them around in the right way. And then in the later ones, and this one included, the VR one, you interact with several that are in different parts of a room maybe, and they all kind of interconnect, but it never gets too mind bendy, too unapproachable, I would say. So it's just a really satisfying game to just chew through in a couple of hours.
Yeah, it sounds like it's very like you're interacting with the things directly, as opposed to like, you know, you're pushing buttons, you're pulling switches, as opposed to like, you know, your LucasArts style puzzle game where you're like, you know, trying to stuff a fish into a cake.
Exactly.
Find the key. Yeah.
Exactly. There are three cogs in front of you, and the cogs have to be next to each other. Figure that out.
Yep.
It's not like, Oh, my sister was born before me and she lives in this other town and she loves salad, so go take her a wheel. Like that. Oh, you know what I mean? Like, it would just, not that sort of incomprehensible, arbitrary type of thing. It is very physical and very satisfying because of that. So they're really fun games. If you've never played one, I'm assuming that first one on the iPhone is like $1. At this point,
yeah, I'm actually surprised because Apple Arcade put like a bunch of classic, iOS games as part of the Apple Arcade free subscription thing, or sorry, paid subscription. Right. So like Threes is now an Apple Arcade game.
I saw that, and then some weird shitty ones like Backgammon that is like the worst version of Backgammon. there's some weird ones that they added very recently, but yeah, I saw.
But
that.
Yeah, it's surprising that The Room, given that I feel like it really found its feet as a iOS game, isn't part of that collection.
Right. Yeah, well, they're, I suppose, less ubiquitous with Apple now, partly because they've put them out all on Steam, and I think they come out on Steam first these days.
Yeah, right, cool.
So, but yeah, I recommend any of those, but the VR one especially, it is like very, very cool being, you know, doing puzzle boxes with your hands. It's good fun.
Yeah, that's fun. What do you have, like a memorable moment from like overall, like a puzzle that really stands out as like a testament to why these games work so well in VR?
I suppose not, because similarly to the iPhone versions, the fun is in kind of how they've been able to map the real world things that you're doing to a controller equivalent of it, like an estimation thing. So it's not in the one thing, it's that you're doing 10 little cranks and spinning little wheels, and there's lots of, it's like a fidget cube. You remember fidget cubes?
Yep.
It's basically that, except at the end it also goes, "Aren't you clever?" So it feels fantastic.
Yeah, okay, cool. All right, that's a good way to talk about it. So that's the Room VR. You can get it on PSVR or all the Oculus stuff.
Yep.
Have you got a favorite of the VR? Of the Room games?
I remember the third one being the one where they really jumped up into like, and now you're exploring an environment as well, and that was pretty cool at the time. So maybe the Room 3 was, I think, the most complex one too. There's a lot of meat.
How long till we get a Hollywood movie? I mean, we already got a movie called The Room.
Well, yeah.
Is it linked?
And that's it's like the puzzle box of movies, right? Where you've got to piece it all together and figure out what it really means. It takes on a completely different life to what you thought this small little box could ever contain.
I actually went to go to one like a screening of The Room, and they give you like a bunch of plastic spoons and stuff like that to throw at the screen whenever there's spoons. And
man, I hated it. I went to one as well for someone's birthday, and I fucking hated it, to be honest. Everyone yelling out like, "Boo, this movie's bad." Like, yeah. You knew that coming in. How are you?
I enjoyed watching the movie. It was the weird, like it was like a sheet. Here are the things that you were supposed to do while you watched this movie.
I couldn't take any of it. The movie, I struggle with the so bad it's good genre.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like when someone goes like, "Hey, look at that. That acting wasn't very good." You're like, "Yeah, that person's not a good actor. What did you expect them to do?" I don't know. I can never get to it. Even though I do that version of podcasting, I can't appreciate it in movies for whatever reason.
So the game I'm going to talk about today is a game that came out last year as well, but it was recently ported to Switch. It's called There Is No Game, Wrong Dimension, and it was developed and published by Draw Me a Pixel. It's currently available on Android and Mac OS. And Steam, and then Switch. It came out on Switch in the middle of April, so last month. Mm. I've been playing this game with my son every morning before school. It is his first example of a puzzle game. I mentioned it earlier, like a throwback to a LucasArts style puzzle game. Mm-hmm. But I was excited to talk to you about this game, Noxy, because from most episodes I've listened of Filthy Casuals, whenever a game that is trying to be funny comes up, you fucking detest it.
Not always, but yeah, that's probably fair to say. Well, like Superliminal that we mentioned before, part of the reason I hated that wasn't the puzzles, it was also the sense of humor in the story in it. Like, I struggle with it sometimes. Like how I got mad at The Room for people enjoying that. If people are trying to have fun with something that I don't love, I'm furious.
So There Is No Game is a very kind of, it starts out very meta and continues so throughout, but so basically you open it up and on the title screen it says There Is No Game, and then like you click on it, I think it says like Don't Start, and then you click Don't Start, and then it says Nothing Here, and you open it, and that's how you open your file. And then a narrator who kind of sounds like a French strong bad, stick with me though.
Okay.
He's like, "What are you doing here? Like, there's no game here. Stop randomly clicking around the screen. You're not going to find a game." And gradually you start like destroying certain parts of the title screen that allow you to manipulate the background and basically like break through to what becomes like just a computer screen. Mm-hmm. And then you get to access the files in an attempt to find a game in this game.
That's a cool idea. That's it. It reminds me a lot of those, like, do you remember those, like, websites that you'd have to change the URL based on a clue that was in the on the website to get to the next bit, and it would be like, click here, but you try and click there and your mouse cursor would go off. It sounds like one of those from back in the day.
There's a lot of great stuff like that. Playing it with a kid absolutely rules, because the jokes that they've clearly put way too much effort into the writing of just fail completely. But anything that is like physics-based, like something falling or you breaking something on the screen, just kills. And
they're funnier. Things falling over is funnier than anything anyone's ever written.
Like, for me, I think, like, maybe the most I've ever laughed playing a game is What the Golf. I think you may have not liked that as well.
No, I liked What the Golf a lot. That was a really good time. The whole thing was a really fun idea. I think I ended up doing all of it. I can't remember.
They do seasonal, like, random DLC and stuff like that.
Do they
it's
really?
Fun. I think it's like one of and they always, it's just like a bunch of random new levels. You can like just log in and like every week they'll remix a bunch of the levels that you can just play and try and get play it like a golf game where you're trying to get like the lowest possible score.
I haven't really checked back in. Maybe I'll do that.
Levels. It's fun. It's a great. I mean, again, another one of Archie's favorite games is What the Golf, because it makes him laugh, and it's, you know, you can fail at it multiple times and you don't really feel like you've failed. Because it's
totally
fun.
There's a lot of variety in it too. Like, even though it's the one mechanic all the time, basically, there's a lot of different ways that they use it, so it never gets boring.
Yeah. So chapter one is you in There Is No Game is you trying to find this game, any game, and you basically have to like infiltrate this like this guy's computer screen, and you're going through all these files and you're finding like a song that when it plays is so loud that it shakes everything. And then so you try and find something else in one of his other folders that like maybe a picture of a tree. And so if you play the music that makes it shake, something will fall out of the tree.
Right.
And then, you know, maybe that'll be something that you can then feed to an icon of an animal, and then they'll give you something. Just like fun little, like, you know, fooling around with what you have in front of you.
Yeah, cool.
And then chapter two is a detective game. And it is classic LucasArts style, like, you know, Monkey Island style graphics and gameplay. But it's, Sherlock Holmes and Watson. But you have, like, you're fighting. You're trying to play the game while fighting with the guy who's narrating the, like, There Is No Game and trying to stop you from playing the game. And there's also a glitch, which is, like, fucking up everything. So like you basically you need to try and beat the level while beating the glitch and getting the better of the narrator. So there's a lot of like fun little things at play. Once you get past the LucasArts detective style game, and you do this by like, you know, you're constantly, you actually, the game is represented as inside of like a physical computer that you can turn around, and so you can pull out the wires of the computer and then or like go on the side and there'll be like a sticker or a dial on the side that you can fool around with, and that will change the environment in the game itself.
That's cool. It's like the Stanley Parable, but like it's taking place in that one boss fight from Metal Gear Solid where you have to unplug the controller.
Yeah. I see you've been playing Castlevania. Once you beat that level, you then do like a Zelda-style RPG. Again, you're like trying to like find things on the menu or in like the environment that allow you to like help this, like, you know, very underpowered hero beat the game as quickly as possible. I'm not going to keep spoiling all of it, but the next part, so you beat that part, and like all these chapters take like around the half hour mark to beat, maybe a bit longer.
Okay.
The third chapter of six, you play that same Zelda, or fourth chapter, whatever, the same Zelda level again, except it's a free-to-play game. And everything you do, it becomes a clicker game where you have to constantly click stuff to get money to buy things that you can then use to manipulate the environment and replay the same game that you've played, except it's really annoying and like on purpose.
Yeah.
And poking fun at the genre of free-to-play games in a really clever way that even my 7-year-old found funny, because he, you know, has downloaded many an iPad game that you know, you can do 20 minutes worth of stuff and then it asks you for money.
Dude,
so he understood all the jokes.
If you can make a 7-year-old laugh deliberately, like if you can actually choose to make a 7-year-old laugh, you are the funniest person in the world. Like that is,
yeah,
you know what I mean? They do not give a shit if you feel bad that they didn't laugh. Like they won't do it unless they want to.
So we are on I think we're like 10, 15 minutes from the end. We were late to school this morning because I thought we could finish the final chapter before school. And the other day I went to go pick him up and his principal was trying to impress some year six students by telling them, and also because they're like, their whole motto at the school this year is like, be brave enough to fail at something.
Okay.
And so she was like trying to relate to these year six kids by going like, you know, I was at my sister's house the other day and they had the new Crash Bandicoot game and I tried to beat the first level and I died and died and died again. But you know, I didn't give up. I kept trying and I beat the level and the kids just looked like, you know, how dare you talk to us about a game that isn't Fortnite.
Yeah.
But nice try, lady.
The new Crash Bandicoot game is the Godfather Part 3 of games as well. Like it doesn't matter that it's a new one. It's an old game. You know what I mean?
Fully. Yeah.
There is not a new game. Oh,
yeah. Because I enjoyed my time with that game, but I can't see anyone young that hasn't got an idiot dad like me being like, hey, play this game.
Right.
No one young is going to attempt to do that one.
Some fucking weird 7-year-old who's into emulators.
Yeah, maybe. Totally.
Been allowed a little bit too much free access to the internet to find out about emulators.
Activision made the right call sending that entire team who made a really well-received game to make Call of Duty games instead.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
For your benefit.
Yeah. I think they should work on a game that I'm going to go, this is dumb. I guess the Call of Duty games are the room, actually. I shouldn't be so judgmental. I've got my own things.
Okay, yeah, of course. But yeah, so I'm on the final level and it ends up it goes so much past just breaking the fourth wall. You end up... there's a bunch of like actually filmed footage of someone who represents the developer of this game, and you're trying to hack into his phone, and you're trying to alter like the temperature in his house, like turn off the lights, like just fuck with the developer so he notices you.
Yeah.
And then there's this big kind of like, I guess the boss fight now is like you, the glitch, other part of the programming that is voiced by a girl who represents like a past love of yours, and the narrator, narrator's ex, you know, there's so many different levels, and it's a really, really enjoyable, and I think takes a lot of risks with like, you know, being very meta and like changing the gameplay while still being very faithful to the puzzle genre. Mm. And there are definitely a few, you know, fish in the microwave style LucasArts puzzles to be solved, but it's very generous with its hint system. Beneath the pause button is a hints button. Mm. And it will show you on the screen when you bring up hints, like the things that it will give you three hints related to each item, and it doesn't, like, you don't lose points or you don't have to like spend coins to get the hints. The game just boos at you when you use them.
That's pretty good. This sounds creative. This sounds like the sort of thing that I like about puzzle games is when you see something brand new in it that you don't understand, and then you're like, that moment you get where you go, oh, okay, I guess I'm meant to hack into his phone here and do this, or I guess I'm meant to shake this tree. This sounds like it would have that sort of thing.
Yeah, and it is like, yeah, I genuinely don't know how this game is going to end. Like, are we going to revisit the other levels that we've done so far, or is it going to be a completely new thing? It's really fun. I would absolutely recommend this to people that maybe haven't ever really connected with a puzzle game, because I think the generosity it has with its hint system and its just sheer creativity when it comes to gameplay, I think make it really, really fun to play. And I would say you might enjoy it a lot as well. It's really creative.
It actually sounds like something that I could get into. I'm looking at some stuff about it now. The fact that they made it despite that it failed its Kickstarter campaign by a lot.
I didn't realize that.
32,000 euros and they got 3,317.
Wow.
Back in 2016, but then we're still able to do it. So that's cool.
And it was, I know it was like originally inspired by like a game jam they did where like, you know, a bunch of developers stay up all night and make a little game.
Cool.
Yeah.
I reckon I really recommend this one. Look at this based on what you've said there. It sounds really cool.
I'm sure it probably plays best on PC. We've been playing it on the TV, on the Switch, and having to move the cursor around with a joystick. There are a few things where you need to... like, it does some amazing stuff with, like, pop-up ads, but within the pop-up ads are a game itself, like, in the free-to-play bit, and, like, each pop-up ad is a mini-game in itself that you have to beat to get a thing that you can then use to fuck with the rest of the level. Very fun. So many great ideas in this game.
I love that sort of thing. When there's five-second ideas, it sounds like Puzzle Game WarioWare type of thing where there's small little ideas that just pop up, and then you do them, and you go, that was cool, and move on.
WarioWare, legitimately one of my favorite franchises of all time.
Same. I miss it. People keep talking about F-Zero coming back. Bring back WarioWare.
Yeah, totally. I think it's a lot easier and cheaper for them to bring it back too. Like, I would, at this point, and they, you know, this is probably what Nintendo will do, I would happily accept a best of, even just WarioWare Gold ported to Switch would be cool, just so more people can experience it.
Sure, I'd probably bet you
at a premium price, but... I reckon. I know you're a massive fan of that.
Yeah.
But, you know, when something's that dire, I just want something to come back in any way, shape,
you know,
or
what?
Form.
Yeah, I think I would probably be in the same boat with that specific thing. But that's it.
Can we get I don't know if you did it on last week's episode yet. I think it may have dropped. The news may have dropped after you recorded. Have you guys spoken about the Skyward Sword amiibo yet? Have you read off on this?
We haven't spoken. I saw it, but I do know that Tommy's pre-ordered it anyway.
Oh, that's great.
Before
that's
he
so
knew
funny.
That it would have any benefit to him at all. Either he said he'd pre-ordered it or he was about to because he's going to get back into amiibo. So I don't know what went wrong. I don't know what
cool, a call for help if there ever was one.
Yeah. Yeah, that's pretty crazy. The
It's so gross.
There's something, though, like... I'm starting to really respect Nintendo's boundary pushing. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's some level of confident with that stuff, or just blatant with that stuff, where you're like, you know what? Go for it, Pablo Escobar. You love to sell drugs. You're the biggest one there ever was. You just get to do this.
Because they know, like, their diehard fans will defend them no matter what. And
even they are starting to have trouble with, like...
Well, I'm absolutely a diehard fan, and this is like definitely a step too far
for
me.
Nuts.
Now. Like,
for anyone who doesn't, but have if context, it was, I guess it's like what a $30 little bird amiibo. Like
it's £30 in
30
the UK
pounds.
As well. It's £30 here, but I don't know what's going on. I guess it's Brexit has just made things so much worse for gamers.
All
the
amiibos
UK.
Are made in Spain, so they can't.
$30 amiibo that links to Skyward Sword, which was a game that I stopped playing on Wii, Zelda Skyward Sword, because it got so tedious with backtracking.
Yeah.
And you have to constantly go back to a place where you can then it's like part of it the game is on the land, but then there's also part of it in the sky, and you fly on this big dumb bird. Mm-hmm. And with the amiibo you can go from the sky to the ground just by scanning it, and no matter where you are, you can go back to the sky and then go back to the ground instead of having to go back to a hub, which could take, you know, like 5 minutes at a time to go from one place to another. Now it's instant.
Totally.
But the only way to use this is to scan the amiibo. It hasn't just been built into the game like, pause, fly to the sky. You have to scan the amiibo.
It was
which
crazy.
Is gate. Yeah.
Because Skyward Sword is the worst game that they've made, I reckon. And like...
Yeah.
The
motion controls suck, but the having to go back and forth is just, yeah.
And it was just, and it held your hand so much the whole time through. You had your little sword called Fi or Fi. I can't remember which way you pronounced it, or Fo or Fum. And she would just give you the answers to any puzzle you came across. You go, oh, that's weird. There's a big crack over there and you just got a bomb, didn't you? Weird. I hated that. But yeah, like making a tangible improvement to that game by cutting out on some of that tedium, because they had that big open world in the sky, which they at the time, I remember, were like, it's like Wind Waker, but there was stuff to look at in Wind Waker. All those fun little islands you came across in Wind Waker was great.
Oh yeah,
but
Wind Waker is a beautiful game. Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway,
but they did a bunch of quality of life improvements in the Wii U port of Wind Waker, and they didn't put any of them behind an amiibo.
Oh, they've
it's
never
so funny
done
that
it before.
Tommy's pre-ordered
it's,
it.
It's clearly a new thing that there's someone up there who's working at Nintendo these days, Scrooge McDuck, who just has some real fresh ideas.
I got the amiibo for 3D World because you unlock an invincible cat suit which is great when playing with kids who love to just jump off every cliff.
Right.
You can, like, I will lose over 100 lives in one level playing that with my kids.
Great. Okay, well, and you know what? Time. Kids are expensive. You've got to know that going into kids, so fair enough. Whoop. That's my phone. Do you mind if I get that for 2 seconds?
Go for it.
Thank you. Sorry, that was my
Your Amiibo.
Yeah, I got to live with. We both were itching to do it the second that I got back on. Anyway, yeah, Nintendo are money hungry.
They Who are isn't, money hungry. Fuck. Yeah. I love eating money.
Yeah. it's very expensive hobby, but it tastes delicious.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found. That project manager I could never seem to hire? And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
So another game that I want to talk about with you is Manifold Garden, just quickly. What have you been playing that one on? Because that came out, that was one of the that launched on Apple Arcade.
Yes.
And it's a first-person puzzle game. But any game where you it's first person or third person, like The Pathless. Have you played that?
I don't think I've played The Pathless, no.
God, you would fucking love it, The Pathless, man. It's it came out last year. It was completely overlooked. Annapurna published it.
Okay.
And it's by the same guys who worked on Journey, made, is it Abzu or something?
Oh, yeah, the swimming one.
The swimming one. But it's one where it's like their take on like a Zelda-esque style game.
Okay.
Where you have like a bird and a bow and arrow, and all of your combat and movement is linked to using that bow and arrow to like shoot these talismans that fly through the sky to keep your momentum up. Very fun, very cool. I went hard on it this year. But it came out on Apple Arcade, and so everyone who had Apple Arcade tried it on their phones, and it's this like very complicated third person adventure game. And it sucked ass on trying to control that game on your phone.
Right.
And I had a similar experience with Manifold Garden, which is like a first person puzzle game where like, yeah, you got to have your left thumb moving forward or back, and then your right thumb moving left or right. But also you can change gravity and like go on different, basically turn the room you're in around. And it was so easy to try and go left or right and then suddenly turn gravity, but then you can't turn it back immediately. You have to like go to the right position to then turn it and then turn it again to get back to where you were.
Yeah.
How is it on not a phone?
Great. I'm playing it on Apple Arcade still, but I've got a controller connected to my Apple TV.
And I've always wanted to do that. Which controller do you use?
I've got one of those 8-bit do or 8-bit do ones. Cool. I've heard people pronounce it 8-bit do or do. It's like a little SNES controller. It looks really cool. And it makes this game great. Much better than... Because I tried it out on an iPad when it first came out and hated it. Couldn't stomach the exact same stuff that you're saying of the confusing and awkward movement. But with a proper controller, it's much, much simpler. And I'm really enjoying it. It's what I kind of... Did you ever play a game called Antichamber?
Yeah, I know that one. Yeah.
I really didn't like that game for some reason. I thought it would like, it was doing the same thing as, or a similar thing to this, where it's got like sort of bare bones, very simple art style version of like non-Euclidean geometry is a term I only know because of other reviews of these games. But it's confusing.
It straight up looks like
stairs.
All the like antechamber looks kind of like a very low res subliminal.
Yeah, totally. And it's the same idea linked. Of like perspective and gravity and things like that aren't necessarily what they seem. You know, you'll go through a door and there'll be a big thing inside of a small thing. It's all M.C. Escher paintings. This is a little bit less of that than stuff like antechamber was. It's more focused on there's six directions that gravity can go in based on, you know, the six sides of a room. And you can change that if you're looking at the next wall, sort of. So if I'm standing on the floor and I go over to the left wall, as long as I'm close enough, I can make that left wall the new direction that gravity is facing. And you're moving little boxes around and little balls and other little objects as you go in, depending on by manipulating gravity like that or by having one floor. So like there's a red wall and a yellow wall. The red boxes will only stick to the red wall. They'll only be active kind of when the red wall is the gravity wall, and the yellow ones, same but with the yellow. So you have to move the yellow ones around in such a way when the yellow one is where gravity is facing to sort of make a little staircase for you, maybe when you change the gravity back.
Right.
And then you can take the red box up somewhere. That sort of thing. It's all kind of difficult to explain because I'm describing something that physics cannot. So
yep.
How can I be expected to convey that information?
It's not your fault.
It's not mine. It's the limits of the human mind that we're up against here. Not my mind specifically, but the entirety of humanity's. That's my argument. And I'm really enjoying it. It's got the perfect puzzle game thing where it gets an idea and it goes, have a look at this. And then now we're done. And then it goes, and now we can expand on it as much as possible. And now it's gone forever. That's the my favorite way for these games to be designed. And I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, I think that was one of the main reasons I did not like... which was the one with the maquette?
Oh, yeah.
Because it was just that one idea, and it wasn't a very interesting idea to me, like the way you solve any of those puzzles, like making smaller or bigger.
And it felt awkward in that game because the actual physics weren't great. Like you'd have to move a big staircase and it was very awkward to move, and you could thought you were fucking up the puzzle when you were just butting your head up against a dodgy bit of programming or whatever. But in this one, it is straightforward enough and clear enough that you just need to get an idea of the world, and then you can piece together what you're meant to do and just execute it first time, kind of. It's really enjoyable.
Yeah, that's cool. It's actually available on everything now. They ported it to Switch, Xbox, PlayStation, and just this last week they've given it an update for PS5.
Yeah, and it looks very nice. So like, if you've got Apple Arcade, you may as well just play it there. It's free, you know, because I think a lot of people still have Apple Arcade subscriptions from if you purchase some Apple thing, you get a bunch of Apple Arcade.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
But if you don't, like, I'd absolutely say it's worth getting.
You see that Netflix looking into the idea of doing a subscription game service a la Apple Arcade?
I did not. Didn't they used to do that? Wasn't Netflix... Didn't they have games back when Netflix was sending you DVDs in the mail?
Oh, that's possible. I'm not sure. But yeah, I mean, I doubt this is them sending like Activision B-tier discs in the mail.
No.
Like Gamefly or whatever.
The new Crash Bandicoot out to all the kids. Who all the principals. For it.
Yeah.
So yeah, it looks nice and it plays well. It's pretty straightforward and like it is a puzzle game. So if you don't like puzzle games or first person perspectives, because there is a bit of like... falling infinitely type of thing that I know some people have issues with first person perspectives and feeling a bit
dreams
sick
of.
This will do that to you. But yeah, I'm into
it. Awesome. So that's Manifold Garden. One last game. I spoke about it last week on last week's episode. I'm making my way through a game called Blue Fire at the moment. And I think Pathless is still my favorite game that I've played this year. But it came out last year. But again, it was released this year that I've absolutely loved almost as much as Pathless. Last week, I made the call that I'm going to try and 90% this game, at least.
Is that like a dad's 100%?
No, it's like, you know, when you... I thought that would be a fun way to rate games, is like, how much of a percentage do you think you'll play? Instead of like giving a score to a game you haven't finished yet, you predict the level of completion you'll give this game.
Yeah, okay. I don't mind that. I've finished a lot of dog shit games, but I guess I loved them.
But you didn't like 100% complete them. You know what I mean?
I have done. I'm a psychopath.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Cool. How many platinums you got?
I've got zero platinums, actually. I never go back in for the dumb achievements. I think I've got one from Astrobot on the PS5, actually. I think
that was an easy one.
That's the one I've got.
Okay, that.
Is the
I have that, and I have Lego Dimensions.
Great.
I got platinums that. And then a One Piece game that came out 2 years ago that was panned, but I loved it.
Wow, that is a bizarre group. Is Lego Dimensions, that's the one that like shut down and everything as well, right? That was the one with the Toys to Life stuff?
Yeah. I mean, I think it was easily the best use of Toys to Life as a format.
Lego makes sense, yeah.
Yeah. Because you would actually like, you would get like a Scooby-Doo set and you build like a mini mystery machine, but then you would like hit this point where you need like a new ability. And so it would give you the instructions to take the mystery machine apart. And then it's a mech, like rebuild it as a mech that Shaggy can sit in. And like, you know, that's cool. I don't know.
That's great.
That was really fun.
That's
I think just the liberal use.
A platinum amount like, of hours of it.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, so I'm making my way through Blue Fire. I'm at 68%. I desperately wanted just that one more percent before I recorded with you today. But
I believe you'll get it after this, so I'm going to count it.
Thanks, Finn. The power of Noxy behind me. But I'm at that point now. Like I told you briefly about it. It is like it got pitched to me as a 3D Hollow Knight, but it's equal parts like a 1964 era, Zelda kind of adventure game.
Yeah.
But I'm at that. But like instead of like to get your hearts, instead of finding like pieces of heart around the world, you find voids, and then you enter the void, and you have to do this brutally hard platforming challenge in this like empty void, basically, where you're jumping on platforms with spinning blades and like platforms that fall beneath you and spikes and just like an endless way of things to like things that will kill you.
Reminds me a bit
of like the exactly yeah. Mario Sunshine, yeah. And if any of that sounds appealing to you, this game is so worth getting into. I'm at a point now where the only things left for me to do, I've done all the side quests. I have four really hard bosses and a bunch, maybe like five or six really hard voids to complete, and then I'm done. But I don't know how many of the voids I'm going to be able to get through. I've gotten all the upgrades, but each void, you know. Each void you complete, you get an extra heart, so that will then make the boss fights easier.
Oh, nice. What? Remind me of the name one more time.
It's called Blue Fire.
Blue Fire. I typed in Blue Flame, which is apparently a song by Astro.
Cool, man.
Don't you love Astro? Blue.
He was from the Jetsons?
Yeah. I think that's it.
He's an EDM artist now.
Dude, he has some... Weirdly, for being that far in the future, it is very stale, his sound. it's 35%. Yeah, this looks cool. You mentioned it to me last week, and I really meant to play it during this week, but I haven't. But it really does seem up my alley.
It's a bit frustrating at first, but in a way that you just want to... You want to, like, beat the game. You know when you're like... You just die constantly. You're like, there's a lot of falling into slime beneath you and like coming back with like two less hearts and you're like, yeah. Oh, fuck!
I
fuck
love
you!
Falling into slime. That's my favorite thing. Yeah. I wish I'd have been a teen sensation during the Nickelodeon era. That's how much I love slime.
And then you pitch it to them like, hey, instead of dropping it on me, let me fall in it.
Yeah. What about we like reverse it, everyone?
Drop me in the slime. But yeah, I love it. It's kind of like playing a game as Deku Link from Majora's Mask, but you have two swords.
Yeah, this character looks a lot like... There's even the little sort of pointy hat.
Yep. And okay, as you like unlock new areas, but then it also has the unlocking new abilities, like Metroidvania feel, and then you can go back to the areas you already visited. And I haven't really done many like Metroidvanias where you are getting the upgrade abilities in a 3D space, and this does it all really, really well.
Awesome. Guess what?
There's so many reasons to backtrack. You picked it up?
I just bought it live on air.
Fuck yeah, man. The power of the podcast.
I'll do anything.
Get Pathless too, man. You'll love that as well.
Yeah, all
right. They're both very good games.
Yeah, awesome. Oh, man. I'm glad I came on here if even just to get some recommendations for myself. This is awesome.
Yeah. Well, while we're here and before we end the episode, for anyone that has a VR unit like myself, I got a PSVR, but not the Oculus yet. But it is like, you know, I got it. I played Astrobot. I played that game where you are a mouse. I got a code for the Iron Man game and laughed at that for 45 minutes. But beyond that, I haven't played much in VR. Have you got any like any hidden gems of VR?
Not really, because lately what I've been doing to partly try and justify myself buying this new VR headset when I already had one that worked with the same computer that I'm using it for. I have
so it's going well.
Yeah, I definitely it's good, and I'm showing a lot of stuff to my girlfriend who doesn't really like video games that much, but as an artist,
I'm imagining you putting the headset on yourself and go, check it out. Like, look at this VR game. And then yeah. Just like looking
isn't
at you,
this
like,
cool?
Oh, okay.
No, watch. No, it doesn't show up on the computer because it's not connected anymore, but you can imagine. I'll describe it to you. Shut up for this one, though. I'm doing a puzzle. Doing a lot of art stuff, so like Tilt Brush and things like that, and just little like roller coaster games. There's something on the Quest 2 called Coaster something. It's terrible, but it's also really fun because there's these bad roller coaster levels that they put you in with like poorly made dinosaurs that sort of run towards you, and it feels like playing that the arcade game of the Lost World. Where
awesome.
It's kind of like that, except I'm not six this time, yep. So I'm enjoying just fucking around with like dumb free stuff on the Quest, and Tilt Brush is amazing. If anyone's an artist, like it's complicated, and I'm not at all good at art, but it seems really good with the stuff that my girlfriend has made with it.
So you can like paint around yourself, right? Like like 3D shapes around yourself.
You can create whole landscapes as well. It's got tools to make polygons, basically. So you can use it as like a 3D modeling software or a sculpting software or whatever. It's pretty versatile, it seems like. So that has been pretty cool. And I'll never get anything out of that myself, but someone who is artistically inclined seems to.
She's like, maybe I guess video games are not disgusting.
Yeah. I guess I misjudged you all this time. I've been secretly judging you.
I should let everyone listening know that Noxie is the first ever guest we've had on the podcast who's recorded an episode while sitting in a gamer chair.
But yeah,
it's a pretty nice one. It's grey. It doesn't really look like something I would have to put my like newborn kids in to go in the car.
No, my only problem with it is that on the back it says the word Titan in big letters.
Why? Like, is there a logoless gamer chair?
I literally think that there's not, and I have no idea what's wrong with everyone who designs these things, or at least what they think is wrong with us, but it's a very comfortable chair, and it's good for your back if you're doing work in it as well. Like, I recommend this chair to anyone who sits, but fuck me if the word Titan doesn't get me made fun of every time someone comes around here.
Yeah, that's great.
Sitting in the Titan Zeus, right.
No, that's good. Good on him.
I should just get a little sticker or something to put over the back of it. Does your podcast have stickers?
No, I'll make one though.
Okay,
I'll be like a podcast fit for Titans, yeah. All the small games. You guys should make a Filthy Casuals gamer chair. That'd be pretty mad.
That actually would be cool.
You can sit in a big U.
I feel like we wouldn't be able to resist the temptation of being like, it's got a dildo on it. Or like,
just on it.
Yeah.
Not even in a place where you could use it.
Yeah, there's just a drawer on the side that you can pull out, yeah. And there's a dildo in that. A little fridge on the other side.
Awesome. Well, we could talk about gamer chairs all day, but sadly, that's the end of the episode. If you want to find Noxie on podcast form anywhere else, you can at his podcast, Filthy Casuals, which comes out every Thursday or Friday.
Yeah, Thursday, I think. Yes, Thursday.
And you'll also be able to find him on Oospooky, which updates sporadically throughout the year.
Wednesday. You get it on Wednesdays. There every
sporadically every on Wednesdays. Okay, here we go.
But not always guaranteed there's going to be a Wednesday every week.
That's true.
If there's not, of course, we're taking a fucking week off, by the way. If that Wednesday doesn't happen one week, you're not getting one on a Thursday.
Don't look for it on the Friday or the Thursday. At Adam G. Nox is where you can find Noxie on Twitter and Instagram.
No, you can't anymore. I got banned from Twitter.
Oh, I forgot about that. That's right. Why was that again?
I tweeted at a friend saying I was going to hit them with a frying pan, and I'm deleted forever. I literally said, I am Tom and you are Jerry. You've been warned. And now Twitter decided that I'm a violent criminal.
That's great.
And you know what? My mental health has improved enormously.
I find like Twitter I guess unless I'm looking for the bad stuff, it is the one that triggers me the least.
I look for the bad stuff on everything. My TikTok algorithm is all flat earthers. I never had TikTok. I've had it for about 4 days and I'm getting all conspiracy theorists and flat earthers. And I didn't search for them once.
That's great.
I believe it now.
What's your TikTok username? Give that a shout out.
I haven't actually set up my own TikTok yet. I've just got a little one that I'm using to go through it, and I probably never will. So don't look for me there until it's
at Miley Cyrus.
Yeah, at Flat Earth Conspiracy Reel 2424.
And that's us seeding the thought that maybe Miley Cyrus is a flat earther. You heard it here first. If you want to find All the Small Games online, you can. Facebook.com/AllTheSmallGames, at Twitter at AllTheSmallGame. And we have a Patreon. John and I are actually recording an episode about the Stanley Parable for our Patreon this week.
Hey.
He's just if you want to hear us talk about the Stanley Parable, head to patreon.com/AllTheSmallGames. We're still taking reviews and comments from our Discord community, which you can join by going to our Patreon. Thanks so much, Noxie, for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And enjoy that very comfortable looking chair.
I will. I'm going to only invite people around in my house who don't know how to read.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.